Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 32. This week on the podcast, it's a special bi-coastal edition. We've got all the dirt from this week's VP debate, and that's no malarkey, plus a recap of the week's important stories, including a look at the Berman-Sherman debate pandemonium. That's right now on Brain Trust Live. So the podcast this week is being recorded live via a program that used to be called iChat and is now called Messages.
Which I didn't even realize that's what it was called.
That's a new thing. But I just learned that today.
Here we are.
We're in different cities.
Lila is in New York.
Right.
I'm in Los Angeles. I just got back from the People's Republic of Portland.
Exactly.
Which was great. I saw some crazy people wanting to impeach Obama, and I was like, that happens in Portland? And then I said to Lila, I was like, and then I realized that they were like coming at it from Obama's left. They like were calling him a mass murderer and all of those things. And I was like, so that's what happens in Portland. It was my first time there. It was fun.
Correct.
But I'm back. Lila's in New York. Here we are.
We're here. The audio quality may or may not be great or terrible.
We're promising you nothing, basically.
We make no promises. but we had...
The content will be as amazing as it is every week.
Of course. And we had to do it this week because this was the most exciting debate thus far by my...
We could... And when Lila says thus far, she means thus far
two.
In America.
In American history.
Ever. Yes. Uh-huh. Right.
I'm claiming this debate the best debate in American history. I'm feeling really...
People will speak of it in the same breath as the Lincoln-Douglas debates.
Of course. Nothing like a vice presidential debate to remind you why America's great. The first thing that was exciting about this debate, I think... is that no one was declared the winner. So
right. I declared someone the winner really quickly.
As did I. But America didn't declare anyone the winner, which is sort of the only reason that anyone pays attention to the debates is for the sport of it. So there was sort of an element, there was a little bit of a letdown in that because I was sort of like figuring out what the media strategy would be so that I could figure out like where the campaign, we said after the first debate that they always call the challenger the winner of the first debate because it adds an element of excitement and it gets people invested in the campaign and that gets eyeballs onto the television. But
I think another reason that people didn't really declare a winner immediately after is because I think that it was sort of wacky enough that there was some...
There was other stuff to talk about.
Yeah. That was the debate for like people who... claim to think debates are boring to like
yes.
have to watch and like be proved that is in fact not necessarily always the case because that was just like sort of
pretty much
entertaining almost from the onset.
And that's really all it was. We didn't really get any great policy ideas from it. No one said anything super enlightening. Ryan basically stuck to the Romney line of confusion and Biden just smiled a lot and then laughed to himself. But the one thing everyone did agree on was that Martha Raddatz was a lot better than Jim Lehrer at keeping control of what was going on. I didn't think she asked the most probing, exciting questions. Her questions
were
oddly specific and oddly vague at the same time.
Yes. And she also sort of, you know, her background is sort of more foreign policy. Right. And I felt like she asked, I realized that that is important to some people, but I just feel like when you have one vice presidential debate and the state sort of the economy is in and what people are caring about, I felt like it leaned a little too heavily on foreign policy. And I was sort of disappointed that it started.
But she also, asked a lot of really loaded questions about foreign policy. Cause you would think that foreign policy would be just a natural win for Biden because he's sort of like the foreign policy guy on the ticket of everyone on any ticket.
Right. He was brought onto the ticket in 2008 to be the foreign policy.
Exactly.
I mean, his sort of existence as the vice president is solely dependent on his credentials.
Exactly. And to like lead with questions about the Libya situation that were sort of like designed to create like a critical response were sort of like, I was like, you know, the Libya situation is like a weird thing that happened that is not really the direct result of any specific foreign policy. It's sort of like it has a lot to do with a lot more sort of like international bigger issues. And so to like lead with a question about that, that just sort of like handed Ryan a win, because it was like Ryan could easily be like, well, you didn't do the right thing. And Biden was like, well, you try doing the right thing when no one's giving you the information. Like that was just sort of like a not a helpful conversation to be having. But
she did do a much, much better job of sort of like keeping it in control for the most part. There was a decent amount of talking over each other, but I feel like
she also was willing to go there and talk over them herself and tell them to shut up.
Yes, she
was. Which is something Jim Lehrer could have.
We're moving on.
Right.
She said that on multiple occasions.
Like, exactly.
Well, yeah.
And I mean, because of that, I think she got most of her questions in. That was a new.
Yeah, I think so.
There was a new development in the world of the, you know, debate of the this year's debates. But the term that I learned today that I think is going to be the most important term that we can use to describe any sort of debate situation from now moving forward is Gish Gallop, which I learned from an article on Daily Kos. It is named for a creationist, like sort of like an outspoken creationist named Dwayne Gish. And it's basically the act of spewing so much BS and so many lies that sort of started from a kernel of truth in one foul swoop that your opponent can't respond to all of them and doesn't have a chance to debunk anything that you said because
right.
you included too many things to even address. And
right.
the whole thing has to start, like the whole thing often starts from like somewhere that sounds truthful, like one fact, so that the person who responds then has to be like, not that this fact isn't true, but you're misrepresenting X, Y, and Z. Like it just makes the rebuttal so much more complicated.
Yes. Right. And, because you've spewed enough stuff that it's just sort of like the other person can't even take notes fast enough. The
right.
fact checkers sort of can't stay on top of things enough.
And it's just like, it's the kind of thing that is so outrageous that it requires you to just laugh to yourself, like Biden did for the entire debate.
That,
like,
I love that there were so many times, not only was he laughing, but I love the times where he was sort of like, threw his hands up in the air, like as if to be like, what?
I was of the winners of this debate were Biden's facial expressions. Biden ran the range during that evening.
Yeah. And a lot of people didn't like that. And a lot of people, it turned a lot of people off, but
I found it charming.
I found it charming. And it also, I think to a certain degree, he had been in debate prep for a while. And I realize that's probably just a thing that he sort of like resorts to. But you have to believe that the amount of that was in there, he never looked like he was trying to stop himself from doing it.
Right.
So you have to think that it was sort of that everybody was just fine with it. Because I think that ultimately, I mean, that face was designed to be made to let people know that the other person was saying something crazy.
Well, and that was the only defense he had.
It on purpose. He was doing it on purpose.
Yeah.
And I thought that it was hilarious every time that they were doing it. I mean, there was like, somebody was like the next morning, I don't remember who it was, but they were like, somebody didn't tell Joe Biden that the debate was split screen. And I was like, oh, I think he knew.
Right.
He knew exactly what was happening the whole time. He knew when the camera was on him.
It was like the polar opposite of Obama sort of looking sleepy and confused while he was in the debate. Mike Huckabee called Joe Biden, said that Joe Biden was acting like an obnoxious drunk during the debate, which is sort of awesome.
He was
acting like an obnoxious drunk, but in the best possible way. There's no other way to like show that Paul Ryan, when he's like speaking really earnestly about some topic that he's making up all the facts on, there's no other way to like refute that. You're not going to get enough time to talk about it. You have to make a case.
It's the easiest visual cue to give to people who were watching. 60 million people were watching. And every time he made that face, they all knew, whether they agreed with him or not, that that was the sign that he thought that he was lying.
Exactly. And he did it so much that it just made Paul Ryan look like a fool a lot of the time.
Yeah,
he was,
I totally agree.
It sort of seemed like Paul Ryan was deluding himself by the end of it because he was sitting right next to him, too. He had to know that he was getting the visual clue that he was lying. Like, it was right. He was sitting there telling him.
I know.
The whole time. Yeah. That he would remind him that he was lying.
But there were a lot of, I mean, besides, there were just, like, so many good takeaways from that debate. Like, malarkey.
Malarkey that I can't pronounce.
I know, Lila's been saying malarkey.
It sounds
which I also like, but
it sounds like
well, monarchy
anarchy.
sounds ridiculous, but that's what's I know exactly. And I loved it when he said, "This is just a lot of stuff." Martha Raddatz was like, "A lot of stuff. What does that mean?" Just sort of like,
And then,
obviously, he wanted to say, "This is a lot of shit." I mean, it was he was having to refrain himself from saying a lot of shit,
at that point,
or
Paul Ryan
crap
said
or whatever
he meant malarkey. Like, Paul Ryan then
it
was like filled in the blank for everyone.
was.
They're all Irish. They know about malarkey. Not like myself.
Right. Joe, unlike Obama though, did not forget to bring up the 47%.
No, he brought up the
He got that
30%.
in the
He brought up the
yeah, he got
47%.
that in the first question that was in regards to taxes or the economy. I
Well, that
mean, he
was
that
like
was
oddly
it
what
was
everyone focused on after the Obama Romney debate. It was like
yeah.
everyone immediately, they weren't just like, oh, he looked sleepy and oh, he didn't look like he was prepped. Everyone was like, why didn't he say 47%? So Biden was like, I'm going to say 47% right away. No one will say I
And
didn't say
that
47%.
was one of his stronger answers too. He really that was when I wasn't feeling concerned at the beginning of the debate, but I could tell that that Libya thing wasn't going quite the way probably he wanted it to. And I didn't think that, you know, he's been sort of catching some flack for saying that he and the president didn't know that they needed more people covering the embassy there, a detail of a marine detail or whatever. And you know, you could sort of see that that was like not going super great. And then as soon as we started getting into like the domestic issues, like that was sort of like his, you were like, yeah, okay, he's got it now. He's like back at it.
That's that I think I mean that was generally sort of a strong topic for him anyway, because Ryan didn't have any new talking points, and the Romney talking points are so eviscerated by this point that like continuing to say them just makes you seem silly.
Exactly. And Biden, I think the best moment of that whole debate, like I literally went back and watched this the next day just because it was so delicious, was Biden telling everybody how Paul Ryan himself had written to him and asked him for stimulus money. That was frigging genius. It was so funny.
That was, I
Because
feel
it
like.
was it made him, you could just see like the fear on his face at that point. I mean, it was just like,
I think
oh.
that was the only moment that I saw Paul Ryan break a little too. Like, he had
It
obviously, like
was.
Romney, been prepped to do a creepy smile for the entire thing.
Yes.
So he looked sort of like, he had this, like, sort of sinister smile that was not, didn't look happy or relaxed. It just looked like the kind
Yes.
of smile that you freeze into when it's really cold out and
Yeah.
you're, like, I was.
And we know that Paul Ryan has a goofy smile because the same day that the debate happened, we were given proof of said goofy smile with the release of those photos that were taken for that time photo spread,
His
which we posted
workout
on our
photo, his workout gear.
Twitter. They're the most ridiculous photos I would probably ever taken of
Well,
a politician, certainly one running for high office.
one
It
of our
was
friends compared it
so insane.
to Screech from Saved by the Bell, and I thought that that was the best. They were like that
Totally was.
nerdy, among other
Yeah.
things. Like they were cheesy and ridiculous, but they were like
Yeah.
nerdy. Like he looked like such a nerd. And it's funny because I think people generally think of him as one of the more attractive members of Congress. And
Right.
he looked so unattractive. And Joe Biden looked so handsome and so assured.
Did.
And I was sort of like, it's
Did
like
have the old man gobbleneck though.
he
You
had
and
a little
I
bit of
were sort
gobbly
of
neck going on.
we were focused on that for
We
the
were.
better part of
But he had
the
such a
debate.
like he had like a very kind of like sparkly smile, and he sort of
Oh
looked
yeah, for sure.
he looked like an aging movie star, and Paul Ryan looked like an evil Smurf, and it was just like it was
Totally.
not what I expected visually from that debate, because I mean Biden's like 30 years older than him. Not 30,
Way
I mean
older.
he's like
Yeah.
way older,
No, he
but he's
is.
old enough to
I
be,
think
is
he
he?
is.
He's old enough to be his
Almost.
father.
Oh,
So
for sure.
like to see like I was sort of like, you know, this isn't fair in some senses because the debate is a very visual medium anyway.
It
And
is.
Paul Ryan
Well,
is sort of supposed to be charismatic, and he just looked kind of like confused, evil, and scared, and also Smurf-like and evil. I said.
Well, and we know we, I mean, this, the whole age issue has come up in recent debates anyway, because so many people had that takeaway from the debates with Obama and McCain in 2008. And you would have thought that the same result would have happened in this debate, but I don't think it felt that way at all. He didn't feel like an old geezer sitting next to him, which McCain did sitting next to Obama the whole
I
time.
heard multiple people on, like, multiple pundits compare Biden to a young Ronald Reagan in the commentary after the debate. And I was sort of like, A, you don't want to be the Republican in a debate where your Democratic foe just got described as a Ronald Reagan.
Right.
Not for any reason. And B, like, Ronald Reagan really got by mostly on being charming because he was an actor and he was very charming before he got, before he got confused and crazy. But, like, it was just sort of like such, because that's sort of like the pinnacle of being charming, I feel like, in the modern era. Like, he's already sort of like got this like heroic status in the Republican Party, but it's like an extra insult that Joe Biden got described as like a young Reagan in a debate with a 37-year-old.
No, totally. Oh boy.
But anyway, Ryan, content-wise, really stuck to the same, you know,
totally did.
Lines. Yes. He, and this is something that Brett and I discussed briefly earlier. He used the same, if you're already on Medicare, this, our changes won't apply to you line that Romney used, but he made a big point of saying, I am part of that group it will change for, which I thought was maybe the only moment in the debate where he sounded borderline clever. Not, I mean, that's a thoroughly evil idea, obviously, but I thought that that was sort of a powerful way of send, that was powerful sort of politics, because it was smart of the Romneys to send him out and have him make a big point about the fact that he was part of that group. Now,
yes,
and that, you know, I mean, he's such a liar anyway, because he goes on about how his family benefited from Social Security. Tears for you, but I don't want you to have it. I don't want anyone else in America to have it now that I'm done. Like,
but I think this was a good, and Biden did this a few times where he like spoke directly to camera and spoke directly to sort of the American people and said, use your common sense on this one.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a really good thing to say, because it's just sort of like, look, if you're looking for someone who is going to be able to do the right thing, has a history of doing the right thing on Medicare and on Social Security, like, you just, you know, like, who passes the smell test on this one?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? It's just sort of like the Republicans have always hated both of those programs. And he also sort of like did a good job. I thought he really nailed him when he was like, you know, Ryan was on the Bush team when they wanted to privatize Social Security. Think about what would have happened with everyone's Social Security money if that was in the market when the market crashed. You know, I mean, he did a really great job on like so many of those issues.
And
like,
this is the only time that they have the ability to tie someone to Bush directly on that ticket. Like, this was their only chance to tie the Romney Ryan ticket to Bush. And I think that on that issue specifically, Biden did a good job of reminding everyone how much Ryan was behind all of these like wackadoodle Bush ideas that never worked out.
Yes.
They were so terrible.
Yeah.
That was, Ryan also used that same statistic that there are 6 studies that say that their tax plan doesn't raise taxes on the middle class. What? And that's such a specific number. It's not like like 5 is like, you know, there are about 5 studies. Like, you maybe go with like 5 or 10 or some number that's like rounded off. 6 is such a specific number. Why would you keep saying that over and over and not ever tell us what 6 they are? No one's ever named all 6. No one's ever, none of them have ever.
No, except, you know who did name all 6 of them? We did.
We did. We named all 6 and none of those studies said what they said that they were saying.
No. And I was actually reading something earlier today and I don't have all the information on it, but basically that the Democrats sort of are giving a harder look to these 6 studies that they claim say what they do, and they don't. And
of course not.
As like today on some of the Sunday shows, and they are sort of catching on that they can sort of refute those 6 studies. 1 or 2 of them were paid for by the Romney campaign.
Right.
Campaign
that doesn't believe in math.
I mean, I guess that's what you do when you need a study that says something that you want it to say, is you have it done.
I mean, you know, that's one area of logic I can't refute. There's Moody's chief economist came out today and said that their arithmetic doesn't work out. I mean, every economist who believes in numbers has said that at this point. It's sort of like, at this point, it just sort of needs to stay, like, new people just need to keep coming out and saying it because it needs to stay in the news, because they keep mentioning these 6 studies that they won't name. Oh, and one of those studies, Wasn't one of those studies from the Independent Businesses Association or whatever that fake lobbying group
is? Oh, that crazy lobbying
that
group.
Crazy
That is
right-wing
like
lobbying group?
right-wing wackadoo. Yeah,
But
exactly.
anyway,
No,
Ryan
yeah.
also said six studies. He also refused to mention which six they were. Like, at a certain point, can you just throw in any number? Like, could Biden have been like, well, 10 studies say the opposite? Could they just have a war of numbers? A war of
Totally.
statistic numbers?
The other thing that I think was that Romney, or that, excuse me, that Ryan really sort of struggled on, where he, I felt like he really looked like an idiot in the stimulus argument, and he really looked like a blubbering idiot in the issue on pulling the troops out of Afghanistan.
Yeah. And we just had some digital noise there, by the way, which, so if you didn't hear that, that was pulling the troops out of Afghanistan. And that is because he echoed something that Romney had also said, which was, we agree on a timeline. We just don't want to broadcast that to our enemies. Like,
right. But we already know that the timeline is 2014. So it's been broadcast. So
right.
You can't agree with that.
You can't
and
unbroadcast
also not want
it.
To broadcast it. Because if you agree with it, then you have broadcasted it.
Exactly.
It's done.
You can't
both
agree with
place.
It and not broadcast it. You have to do one or the
Correct.
Other.
Yes.
And if you agree with
and
the
I thought
timeline,
Biden did a really good job of explaining why you do need to broadcast it,
yeah.
basically. Because otherwise, you know, the Afghans aren't going to sort of, you sort of have to say that you're leaving in 2014 to make them pull their shit together by 2014.
Exactly. I mean,
you know,
it's also, I feel like Ryan was largely in favor of unilateral military action and things that I think sound fairly sinister and sort of not, you know, are not popular because of the Bush years. And that sort of sounded vaguely Bush-like, the whole, like, we don't want to broadcast. It sounded like fear-mongering. It didn't sound like a real problem because it didn't sound diplomatic. It just sort of like sounded like a thing that you say to scare everyone. And he was already, you know, Biden was really strong on various, like, war, you know, references to wars that Ryan is sort of, like, threatening to fight, like, in Iran and, you know, issues
well,
that
I know,
start willing to get involved in other countries, like Syria, without any sort of international support.
Yes, he did a really good job, I think, of scaring people about that. And it was because in terms of Syria, he was like, well, if you don't agree what we're doing, do you want to put troops on the ground? He did the same thing with Iran. Well, if you don't agree with the sanctions, do you want to send troops in? And I think that is a good, you know, he's putting words in his mouth. So, I mean, obviously he's sort of like, you know, but it was a cagey move, if you will, because I think that, you know, basically sort of scared people watching that debate into thinking that perhaps maybe, you know, he wants to be starting a bunch of new wars.
It was an important distinction too, because the one thing that is really unpopular from the Bush years was unilateral military action.
Exactly.
And
yes.
basically Ryan was sitting there asking for someone to ask him about that because he was going on about how annoyed he was that, you know, Obama's always going to the UN for support. We don't need the UN because we're the policemen of the world. But like, of course people want us to have UN support when we do take military action.
Yeah. Well, and I think Biden did a good job of saying that too. I mean, he was like, we have sort of gotten back to being able to, you know, I mean, he was like, if we do have to go into Iran, we'll have the entire world behind us.
Like,
which
do we want to go in there alone and have another Afghanistan?
Not, 4 years ago would not have been the case. I mean, they've sort of had to have, they've been doing 4 years of damage control. With, you know, everybody who would maybe back us up. So,
which is also,
I
mean,
did a good job explaining.
I think if the debate hadn't led with the Libya topic, I think that Biden would have been considered like far and away the winner on all foreign policy.
I think so.
But it just sort of like started off wrong because he really didn't get credit for all these other things that he brought up.
No, that was really the only, I would say that was his only loser.
Yeah. Well, and that was a setup because it's really easy to be the guy who didn't have any responsibility sitting there being like, you know,
well, yeah, Paul Ryan can.
I would have done this.
Done
like, go screw yourself, because you weren't getting the bad information with the president or whatever. Like, you didn't.
Yeah.
You got the information, and you didn't have to do anything about it. So it didn't matter what you thought when you got the information. You didn't have to act right away. So it's sort of like, just get over yourself. That I was actually sort of surprised by Martha Raddatz's final question about abortion, though. All right, was the last question. It was like oddly, it was like very specific because it was asking them to tie their religious beliefs to their beliefs on abortion. And they're both Catholic. Yeah. And it was, I think, a winner for Biden, but it was like such, like I've never had both... a question like that answered in.
No, me either. I mean, it didn't bother me so much, honestly, because I think that the whole issue about even tying it into religion, I think, was to elicit how they could both be Catholics and have different views.
No, I think it was a smart way to do it.
Me too. And I think they actually both had, I think they both answered it well. I mean, I think that if you were a Catholic who agrees with Biden, then you would say that, yes, that is what I think. And I think that you would say the other thing about Paul Ryan, too. I always feel like debating abortion is sort of like a ridiculous
thing like,
to do.
Yeah, it's like debating about two
different. She wasn't really asking them to do that. That didn't ultimately bother me.
It was
an odd last question.
It was an odd, it was total non sequitur. But I also thought that it was helpful that Biden answered that second because it, I don't think that, I think Ryan maybe would have sounded like he answered it fine if he had gone second himself. But Biden got the chance to offer a rebuttal that reminded people that, like, yes, this guy believes this and I agree with him, but I just don't care if you believe it too. Like, you do whatever you want. And I think that was the most important point because that's the thing that always gets forgotten in the abortion debate anyway, is like, you don't have to get an abortion if you don't agree with abortion.
Right.
I mean,
and you don't even, and you don't have to agree with abortion even if you're pro-choice.
No.
I mean, you know what I mean? Like I say that to people who are pro-life all the time. I mean,
exactly.
I am ultimately, I suppose, pro-life.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like in the generic sense of probably like, I don't know that I would necessarily counsel someone to like get an abortion. You would have to be in the situation, but I wouldn't tell them that they couldn't.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I certainly, like, you wouldn't want to vote that way. But that's,
no.
I had a friend at one point who was in the Bush years, was voting for Bush. And I was sort of like, why are you doing this? And she was Catholic. And she was like, I'm very against abortion. And I was like, great, don't get one. That's a dog.
You may be hearing my dog bark too, everyone. That's happening.
I mean, I was sort of like, don't get one. Just don't, like, decide that, you know, if someone you know needs one that they can't get one, like, you don't know, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But that's just some barking that's never going to stop.
Lila knows all about the dog barking. Now,
Brent has a real dog barking situation. It's like issues with the
neighbors. Why we normally record this at Lila's.
Where there's only random dog barking that it doesn't belong to my dog.
Anyway. Piece of work. Oh, you know what? I got her when I was in Portland, I got her a dog collar that is red, white, and blue and has donkeys on it. I got her a Democratic.
Really? You got her a Democratic? To go. Mm-hmm. Brent got her a football dog collar before for the Hawkeyes.
Oh, yeah. For an Iowa.
But now we're doing election year chic. We're not.
Yeah.
We're not.
Well, I think she would want everyone to know where she stands.
I agree.
I think, on the issues. Yeah, right?
I think that's probably the most important political statement that you could make with your dog.
I agree.
Anyway. One more point about the debate. The Wall Street Journal has now put out an op-ed, or I think it's an editorial, whining about how the Obama camp is calling Romney and the Romney-Ryan ticket liars for lying constantly. Like, whining that that's becoming an issue. Like, they're sort of like, is unprecedented in presidential election, you know, history. And I was like, well, so is this much lying. Like,
I know.
A ticket that doesn't have a platform and they're just, like, changing their mind every 5 seconds and not telling the truth about anything. Like, are you supposed to pretend like they're not lying? Well, it goes back to the Gish Gallop. It's like, if you just sort of spread so many lies, like at a certain point, it makes your opponent look like an illegitimate candidate because they're spending all this time reminding everyone that you're lying.
Yeah.
Oh, that's sort of infuriating, but I mean, to par for the course.
Very much so.
California had its own election debate excitement.
Oh, this
week
is delicious.
This
and we
is
actually have
story.
A friend of ours who gets to vote in this election, and I'm so jealous of her.
I know. I'm not that jealous because I honestly like still don't really know who you're supposed to vote for in this election.
I don't either.
The name's Ryan.
I know
it's hard
that
to know
like
too.
It's so interesting because like this, there's been like an odd. So this race has an odd history. It's the Berman Sherman race, which is in California's 30th congressional district, and It's a race that that district and are in the general against each other because of California's jungle primaries, which we talked
Which we
about on
just
this
started this year.
podcast a while ago, which just started this year, where basically like the two highest vote getters from like the general primary where everybody runs against each other, Democrats, Republicans, Green, whoever, and the two highest vote getters end up in basically a runoff against each other in
Right.
the general. And so we ended up with the two Democrat incumbents. They got in a physical fight this week at a debate, basically, or a forum or whatever it was, but they literally like had to be separated by security.
Well, one of them basically like got too close to the other one, and the other one
Right.
said some
Random
variant of
to
like, "Do you want
fights.
some of this?" And then someone else
Keep
sort
in
of
mind
like,
they're like 57, they're 57 and 71 or
right.
something like that.
Yeah,
I
they're
can't remember.
57 and 71. Berman has been in Congress for 30 years, and Sherman's been in Congress for 16 years. So they're both like career politicians.
Right.
And so one of them gets in the other's face. Then the other is sort of like, "You don't get in my face." And then there's a push, or sort of like a pat push that's very aggressive. And then Berman's campaign released the footage on YouTube. So then it
Yes.
went viral because it was hilarious.
But the whole race has been weird because it's considered to be sort of like one of the most hotly contested races because it's a, two incumbents.
Right.
And so
From the same party.
like Republicans have, I feel like I read something recently about like a John McCain endorsement because he's like on the Armed Services Committee with like one of these guys. So like, I mean, the whole campaign has just been a
Here's
little
what should
batty
become clear to
because,
you by this point. Brent and I can't tell the difference between Berman and Sherman ourselves. Their names
well,
rhyme, and neither of them
I
rep
was going to say
us.
that's a big problem.
Like,
That's a problem.
I have no idea who's supposed to win this, and I don't know who would be the one on the Armed Services Committee.
Nope.
I don't have any sense of
I would probably vote for the one that's not.
right, exactly. And it's so, like Sherman is, I think, the one who's 57, and he's the one that like lunged at Berman, who's the older one, and then shouted, "You want to get into this?" at him. But they had
So
this
good.
like weird stare down where they were like really close to each other, and then a sheriff's deputy had to get involved.
I know.
So it
We
was
this is on our
getting,
Facebook page too, by the way.
it's we posted that
So if you
immediately because
want
we're patriots.
Totally.
But it was just
Oh
like,
God.
it was, I think, the highlight of the campaign season by far. It sounded like something that
Oh, hello.
happens. It's like not even like something you could parody because it's.
No, it sounds like something that would happen in like another country's election, basically. It
Yes.
doesn't sound like something that would happen here, especially between two incumbents. Like you would think that both of them
Would have some
sort of have
decorum.
decorum. Yeah, exactly.
Earth.
Oh, speaking of these jungle primaries too, the jungle primaries are one of the proposition issues in Arizona.
Oh,
I
really?
realized
Other states are
when I
trying
was
it.
my parents, so my parents get to vote on that, and I was like talking to my mom about that. Can you imagine like two, because in Arizona it's bad.
Armed.
Like in California, in California we're ending up with a bunch of Democrats running against each other, which is sort of like whatever. But can you imagine, like, you're gonna get, if that passes, you're gonna get some Tea Party candidates running against each other. Can you imagine two Tea Partiers basically like trying to out
Out tea
crazy
party
each
each
other?
other? Oh my God.
Like, that is going to devolve into some serious shit right there.
Yeah.
Like, I almost sort of hope that passes because like that, if
That
you
could
think two
write our
Democrats could
podcast
fight
for
back
us for the next 3 years.
anyway. Pretty much. Yeah. Arizonans, vote for the jungle primary system,
Right.
please.
Television's gotten boring for me and Brent. We need something.
Seriously.
Yeah,
Totally.
I'm like very curious about how this is going to turn out in California because this is one of the few issues that I feel like no one has any opinion on that really has anything backing it. Like it's just like so random what's going to happen. Everything that has
Yeah, I
happened
mean it was
so far
just,
has been unexpected and weird. Like our
yeah,
whole election
I
system
mean
is in
it's an
disarray.
experiment.
Yeah.
It's an experiment.
That we're doing in like the biggest state in the country. We're just throwing him to the water and telling us to swim. The other thing that happened this week that is only one minor story that I insisted that we bring to the podcast because I'm pissed off about it, is Mitt Romney giving this interview where he's like, people don't just die in their apartments because they don't have insurance. Basically undercutting any claim that he has that he's planning to provide some sort of alternative insurance plan for us, first of all. Because obviously, you don't need to make this statement if you're planning to help everyone get insurance. Like, normally, normally a politician would be like, here's my plan because more people need insurance. But Romney's sort of like, well, you don't need insurance. Yeah. You don't die because
of insurance. Really.
But, exactly. But he's also, like, said it in the – he used the word apartment instead of house.
Yeah, we were both suspect of the term apartment. Which, because, like, that, I feel like just it sort of, like, implies a class sort of – situation.
Yeah. And he said it in Ohio, where, like, cause, like, I grew up in New York City. Everyone lived in apartments. I use the word apartment and house interchangeably all the time because I just sort of grew up doing that and I don't even think about it. So it wouldn't have that connotation in New York. But he said it in Ohio, in Columbus, Ohio, to the Columbus Dispatch. And he said, like, you know, it's, you know, if people get sick here and they don't have insurance, it's not like they die. They just, you know, they get taken to the hospital and we treat them anyway and we just have, you know, taxpayers pay for it, basically.
Yeah.
Kind of ignoring
the
fact that raises our taxes, first of all. That's one issue.
Right. Well, and he's brought this up before, too, because there was that infamous quote of him from when he was on 60 Minutes basically saying, like, you know, people can have a healthcare plan of just going to the emergency room if they want.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a similar statement to this, really. It's just sort of like, you know, you can still go to the hospital, which is true. But I would also, my guess is that there probably have been people who have died in their apartment.
Well, the HuffPost article that talks about this says that there's a healthcare advocacy group that has studied this and puts the number at 26,000 deaths a year that are related to lack of health insurance, basically, that are right. People who don't get care because they don't have insurance.
Right, and I
whatever
bet
reason don't get preventative. You know, they don't start with preventative care. They maybe don't go to the hospital because they know that they can't afford to. Because this is the thing: is you end up bankrupt if you go to the hospital without health insurance.
Exactly.
It's not just like, oh, the government pays for it and everything's fine. First, you go bankrupt, then the government pays for it. Like, it's not so. It's not as simple as just like going, you know, to just check everything out. Like, that's just.
And I bet some of those.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I bet some of those 26,000 people live in apartments too.
I bet a lot of them do. Even in Ohio, where people normally live in houses. It's so funny because I feel like I dissect words like that coming out of his mouth more than anyone else because he's so rich that I feel like.
Well, I was gonna say,
have to be a deliberate thing. Like, I would use the word apartment maybe because I think of apartments as homes. But
exactly,
he doesn't.
No, exactly. Like, there's a certain sort of perceived disdain.
Exactly.
When he says the term apartment.
Yeah.
Just because you have to think that he's thinking about, like, these skis bags that are, like, living in apartments.
Exactly.
Basically.
Yeah. Like, these lazy people who can't get their act together enough to buy a house like a respectable person. So they deserve to die from lack of health care. Anyway. The other thing that happened this week was that CEOs started running wild, telling everyone in emails that they're going to fire all their employees if Obama becomes elected. Like, this is just like, first of all, this is like blatant opportunism in regards to like CEOs wanting to be famous. This is like, you know, this is like a stupid publicity generator for them, but also
yes.
This is the craziest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Well, also, and if you're sitting there listening to this and you're thinking, that sounds like something that maybe isn't allowed.
You'd be correct.
That's because you would be correct.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just do that.
No. Well, what they're doing is they're not endorsing any candidates, or they're not forcing their employees to vote for anyone.
No.
They're just saying, like, you know.
Threatening their jobs.
Yeah, I hope you know that if Obama gets elected, and I'm not saying that you can do anything about it or not, I'm just saying, I hope you know that if Obama gets elected, I don't know what I can do to protect your job. Like, that's essentially what they're saying. Or, that's what David Siegel was saying, who was the first, he runs this, like, timeshare empire, and he was the first person to come out, and that was where the news broke. Today, Arthur Allen, who is the CEO of ASG Software Solutions, the story broke today. I don't think this happened today, but Chris Hayes reported that he wrote this email to his employees that was basically like telling them that, you know, he doesn't know what to tell them if they vote for Obama and they lose their job. Like, they really can only blame themselves, which I feel like is bordering suspiciously not legal, but is probably like technically you would legal. Think. Also, the Koch brothers are like, the companies owned by the Koch brothers are like sending pro-Romney mailers to their employees, which is annoying. I have a friend who I will not name because she'll be really mad at me, who works for a large oil giant, who got an email about from another employee about joining a pro-Romney super PAC run by, you know, for the employees, about being part of a super PAC for employees. Like, at work, though. Like, somebody at work sent her an email asking her to join their super PAC that employees at this oil company are doing for Romney.
That is pretty crazy.
That's so sinister. It's so weird and, like...
Totally sinister.
Like, yeah. Also, what other industry are people like, let's just start our own super PAC? Like, am I getting phone calls at work to start a super PAC? Like,
weirdly... Should we start one?
I mean, maybe we should.
We don't have any money or know anyone with any.
But we can call it the People and Things Institute Super PAC.
Yeah.
Which is, we've been wanting to start People and Things
Institute. Been trying to get that off the ground for a long time.
Exactly.
Oh, boy.
And then, finally this week, in really exciting pop culture news, the creator of Friday Night Lights got all up in Robbie's business.
If you don't know, this is
the greatest show
of Kyle and I's favorite show.
Yeah.
I would contend that it is, and am not being facetious, and would debate someone, and I feel like it could be debated, and you could win if you did it right, that's the best show that's ever been on television. That's just my opinion.
Certainly.
Anyway.
Certainly, I mean, you know, allowing for differences in taste regarding, you know, it is certainly one of the best shows that has, like, ever been made. And it's sort of critically acknowledged to be as such.
Yes.
So
Peter Berg says goes by me.
Correct.
Unless it's Battleship, which we just won't talk about.
We're not going to discuss that. But Peter Berg wrote a letter it was to the Romney campaign, but it was actually to, like, the press, basically.
Yeah, I was going to say it wasn't.
It wasn't like, he didn't, like, write a letter to Mitt. It
wasn't really.
No. Where he said that he wishes that the campaign would stop using the slogan that he wrote for the characters in the show's football team, which is "Your eyes, full hearts, can't lose," which is, the show is about football. Everyone screams that before the game or whatever. That's like their team motto. And the Romney campaign has been using it. But he also said something funny, because there's a character on the show who's sort of like a sleazy car salesman. And he said that the Buddy only Garrity. Character that would maybe agree with the Romney line of politics would be Buddy Garrity, who, you know, who doesn't buy American and sells foreign cars. And, like, he made some comment about one of the characters on the show, who's, like, the douchebag character on the show, being maybe the only person associated with the show who would fall for that line of, you know, foolishness. But then I heard that the guy who wrote the book of Friday Night Lights, the original book / I think he might have written the screenplay too, got mad that Peter Berg had written this letter. I mean, there's, like, now a big infight going on with the Friday Night Lights world.
Well, it takes place in Texas, so I'm not surprised that someone who has something to do with the book or movie or TV show is upset about it.
Well, but author...
It's Peter Berg's show, so, I mean...
It's Peter Berg's show. The guy who wrote the book has endorsed Mitt Romney in a Daily Beast column. So that's why it's sort of contentious. His name is Buzz Bissinger, which is a hilarious name anyway. And he
don't be named.
He didn't create the best show on television. He wrote a book about football. Like,
yeah.
Different.
Exactly.
So
very much so.
Ew, now there's a mosquito on my hand. The country is so terrible. anyway. so that's our final story of the week. We did a short podcast because we're not in the same city and we were both traveling, but we had to cover the VP debates because
there was no way that we could let it slide.
There was no way that we could let it slide.
I mean, it just, And we have, by the time that you're listening to this, we'll be within 24 hours of the next presidential debate, too.
I know.
It's on Tuesday. So get excited for that. I think we've sort of set the stage for, this is the Candy Crowley one.
No.
Sandwich.
I
think that they should put a moratorium on anyone hosting or moderating a presidential debate who has a name that a stripper would have.
Correct. I think they should put a moratorium on people with names that end on a vowel sound and don't, and at, have an I, a single I. Like,
yes.
If your name ends with an E sound, you shouldn't be allowed to end. You shouldn't be allowed to spell it ending with an I. You should have to have a Y in there. If you have to do IE because you're cutesy, that's fine. But just don't end on a straight I. That's crazy.
Great.
That's crazy talk. It has nothing.
Yeah, you can't do it.
Spelling and grammar.
So we'll see how she does.
We'll see how she does. I'm sort of excited because we've been talking this debate up a lot. So there's that. But we apologize for any technical difficulties we had. You know, if you heard any digital noise this week, that's because we don't know how to fix it. and we will hopefully, we may be Skyping next week or we may be doing it live a little bit late. It remains to be seen. We'll see how successful this is in the end.
Yes.
But either way, watch on Tuesday. Have a good week. We will talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.